Great to have you here. In this lesson, we're exploring using data responsibly. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to get into this because it's just so applicable to basically every career path right now.
Totally. And you know, before we even try to define our terms here, I want to set the scene with a story. So think about this. A few years ago, there was this major multinational tech company, and they decided to build an AI recruitment tool.
Oh, right. The resume scanner.
Exactly. The goal was super simple, right? They just wanted to find top talent quickly. So they have this algorithm scan thousands of incoming resumes. But, and this is the wild part, within a year, they had to completely scrap the entire project.
Yeah, it was a massive failure.
Because the algorithm had basically taught itself to systematically downgrade any resume that contained the word women's.
Whoa.
Like if you were the captain of the women's chess club or went to a women's college, boom, downgraded.
It's just a chilling example, honestly. And I mean, it perfectly frames why this topic of using data responsibly is so critical for all of us.
Hmm.
Because that algorithm, you know, it didn't fail because some programmer maliciously sat down and wrote sexist code.
Right.
It failed because of the data it was fed. They trained the machine on 10 years of the company's historical hiring data. And because the tech industry had been, you know, predominantly male during that specific decade.
The machine just learned the pattern.
Exactly. It recognized male-dominated traits as the mathematical baseline for success. So it just automated and scaled a historical bias.
Which is terrifying.
Yeah. And it shows that when we talk about data in a digital age, we aren't just talking about abstract numbers, you know, sitting inertly in a spreadsheet somewhere.
Right. It's not just math.
No, not at all. We are talking about the active fabric of how decisions are made. It's how futures are shaped and really how careers are built.
And I think that immediately bridges the gap for you, the listener, right? It takes this from a high-level abstract concept to your actual day-to-day digital life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether you are, you know, prepping for your first major role or you are already navigating a digitally enabled career, data is going to be your constant companion.
It is everywhere.
We hear the phrase using data responsibly constantly, but we really need to define what that actually looks like in practice.
Well, at its core, responsible data use means you're interacting with information through a framework of care, ethics, and accuracy.
Care, ethics, and accuracy. Okay.
Right. It is the absolute foundation of protecting people, improving mutual trust, and this is key preventing misleading conclusions.
Yeah.
Because without those three pillars, I mean, the entire ecosystem of digital decision making just completely collapses.
You know, I often visualize data as a high powered tool. Like, think of a professional grade power saw.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah, because it is incredibly effective, right? It's exactly what you need if you're trying to build something substantial, like a house or, you know, in our professional case, a business strategy, an app, or a research paper.
Exactly. You need the tool to do the heavy lifting.
Right. But if you pick up that power saw without understanding the safety mechanisms and without a fundamental respect for the material you're cutting, the risk isn't just that you build a crooked house.
No, it's way worse than that.
You can cause massive immediate harm to yourself and literally anyone standing nearby.
Yeah, and pushing that analogy just a bit further, if you mishandle a power saw, the damage is localized, right? It's just you and the room you're in.
Sure.
But if you mishandle data at scale, the damage can impact thousands or even millions of people simultaneously, like we saw with that AI recruiting tool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the scale is totally different.
And the big shift we are seeing in the modern workplace is that so many people still view themselves as mere consumers of data.
Like it's someone else's job.
Right. They assume the tech giants, the data scientists, the major institutions, they're the ones operating the heavy machinery. And the rest of us just, you know, read the reports.
But that's not the reality anymore, is it?
That simply isn't true anymore. I mean, if you are a university student compiling survey results for a group project or a young professional analyzing a localized customer feedback loop, you are a curator.
You're operating the machine.
You are a creator. You are holding that power tool every single day.
Okay, I want to challenge that slightly, though, just to play devil's advocate.
Go for it.
I understand the systemic risk when we are talking about, like, an enterprise-level AI deciding who gets a mortgage. That's huge.
Right.
But let's bring this down to earth for a second. If I'm a junior analyst or an intern and I'm just compiling user feedback for some, small marketing campaign, the stakes feel pretty low, honestly.
I hear what you're saying.
Like, if I force a correlation that isn't really there or accidentally misrepresent a pie chart, am I really...
Well, you have to look at the mechanics of the data supply chain. Data rarely stops with the person who first processes it.
Okay.
The fallout of irresponsible data use operates in this cascading effect. It hits in four distinct waves.
Four waves. Break that down for me.
So first, you get the misleading claim itself. Let's take your junior analyst example. You create a chart that slightly exaggerates how much customers love a new feature.
Just a little visual tweak to make it look good.
Right. And you hand it to your manager. That's wave one. Second, that misleading claim leads to the next wave, which is unfair or flawed decisions.
Oh, because the manager acts on it.
Exactly.
Huh.
Your manager puts that chart in a quarterly report, the executive team sees it, and they decide to cut funding from a critical, functional part of the product to double down on the feature you just hyped up.
So my one bad chart essentially misdirected resources for the whole department.
Exactly. You didn't just make a bad chart. You steered the ship into the rocks.
Wow. Okay, what's the third wave?
The third wave hits when we introduce personal information into the mix, which brings massive privacy risks.
Like if I didn't blur out email addresses or something.
Right. If your localized survey wasn't anonymized correctly, real human beings just had their personal details exposed internally, or worse, externally.
Yikes.
And finally, all of this culminates in the fourth wave, a complete and total loss of trust.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Once an audience, a customer base, or a society realizes the underlying data is flawed or manipulated, I mean, restoring that credibility is nearly impossible.
It's gone.
But getting it right, however, acts as the ultimate professional differentiator.
Because in a world completely drowning in information, the person who can be trusted to handle that information ethically becomes invaluable.
Precisely. They become the most important person in the room.
But let's dig into the mechanics of that manipulation. When we see a misleading claim, it's really easy to assume it's just, a clerical error.
Right, like a typo.
Yeah. Somebody doesn't know how to use Excel, so they make a poorly drawn graph where the y-axis doesn't start at zero.
Happens all the time.
At what point does a simple mistake cross the line into an actual ethical breach?
Well, it comes down to intent, transparency, and methodology. Yes, mistakes happen. People use the wrong formula. We're human.
Sure.
But the core concept of ethics dictates that data should never be manipulated to deliberately mislead. And this is deeply tied to the other two pillars, accuracy and privacy.
How does accuracy fit into that, though? If the math is right, isn't it accurate?
Not necessarily. Accuracy isn't just about doing the math correctly. It means you take on the responsibility to interpret the data honestly.
Oh, I see.
If you notice your methodology is flawed, or a chart is visually exaggerating a trend, even if it perfectly supports, your argument accuracy demands you correct it.
So you have to call yourself out.
Exactly. And privacy means recognizing that data points are proxies for real people. Protecting their digital footprint is a fundamental requirement, not just like an optional feature you tack on at the end.
So how do we actually execute this? Like, how does a student or a young professional apply these concepts when they are just staring at a blank screen trying to synthesize a bunch of information?
It requires highly actionable strategies, and it starts with verifying your sources.
Checking where the data came from.
Right. You cannot build a structurally sound argument on a cracked foundation. You need to investigate where the numbers came from, who collected them, and crucially, what their motivation was.
Because data isn't neutral.
Exactly. Data is not this purely objective, naturally occurring substance. It is collected by humans who make deliberate choices about what to measure and what to ignore.
But, once you've verified the data, I feel like you face a completely different challenge, which is avoiding the exaggeration of your findings.
Oh, yeah. The temptation is huge.
Honestly, resisting that urge goes directly against human nature. If you are a junior analyst tasked with finding an insight to present to your boss, or a student trying to secure a top grade from a tough professor, there is massive pressure to deliver a clean, punchy narrative.
There really is. You want to be the hero.
Right. You look at a fuzzy, weak correlation, and the temptation to hype it up is overwhelming. You want to walk into that room and announce you found the magic bullet.
The mechanism behind that temptation is the desire for a frictionless story. We all want things to make perfect sense.
Yeah, exactly.
But overstating your findings, smoothing out all those rough edges, is a trap. It might get you a momentary nod of approval, but it severely damages your long-term credibility.
Because reality isn't frictionless.
Right. If you present a weak correlation as an undeniable fact, and the business bases a financial quarter on it, the subsequent failure will be traced directly back to your analysis.
And then you're the one in trouble.
Yes. The true professional skill is letting the data speak its actual truth. Even if that truth is highly nuanced, totally mundane, or just less flashy than your boss hoped for.
But I mean, presenting fuzzy data feels like admitting failure, doesn't it? If I walk into a meeting and say, the data is inconclusive, it feels like I just haven't done my job.
It does feel that way sometimes.
How do you present limitations without looking incompetent?
You do it by formally integrating the limitations into your analysis. It becomes part of the deliverable.
Okay, what does that look like?
Let's think of a scenario involving a university student working on a research project. So let's say they are analyzing local traffic data to prove that a newly installed bike lane was causing major car congestion.
Okay, classic urban planning debate.
Right. So they pull the traffic feeds, and sure enough, the data shows cars were moving 20% slower during the month the bike lane was installed.
Well, that sounds like a clean, undeniable narrative. The bike lane slows down cars. Case closed.
But the student also realizes it rained heavily on 80% of the days during that specific month.
Oh, yeah, that would do it.
The rain is a massive, confounding variable. So now the student faces a choice. They could easily hide the weather variable, present the traffic speeds as a direct isolated result of the bike lane, and get a really punchy headline for their project.
Which is exactly what people do every day to win arguments online, by the way.
Yes, all the time. But instead, this student chooses to clearly explain the data's limitations. They present the slower speeds, but they dedicate a specific section of their report to the weather variable.
So they just lay it all out there.
Exactly. They explicitly state, because of anomalous rainfall, this data cannot conclusively prove the bike lane is the sole cause of the congestion. Further data collection during dry weather is required.
You know, by admitting what the data doesn't show, they actually elevated the entire project.
Exactly.
They didn't just dump numbers on a page. They provided real context. And translating that to a future workplace, that student just demonstrated profound intellectual honesty.
And intellectual honesty is the exact currency of a successful digitally enabled career.
I love that phrase, intellectual honesty.
It's true. When you are in a boardroom, a competent executive doesn't want you to confidently lie to them with a polished, perfect chart. They want you to map the terrain accurately.
They need to know where the landmines are.
Right. They want you to say, based on the data, we believe X is the most likely outcome, but we have to acknowledge a 15% margin of error due to our limited sample size. That level of transparency builds immense lasting trust.
It proves you aren't just a salesperson pushing a narrative at all costs. You are a reliable guide to reality.
Exactly.
Which forces us to look really closely at the deeper ethical boundaries here. When we hide those limitations, like when we strip away the context of the rain to blame the bike lane, we aren't just tweaking a presentation.
No.
We are actively manipulating the audience.
You really are. The underlying mechanism of that manipulation is that you are making an unfair decision on behalf of your audience.
Oh, that's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, by hiding limitations, you deprive them of the full picture.
Yeah.
You are independently deciding what they should and shouldn't know.
Which means they can't make their own choices.
Right. It fundamentally prevents them from making a fully informed choice. You are, in effect, robbing them of their agency.
It makes me think about how we handle personal data specifically and the responsibility of holding context.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, imagine someone trusts you enough to let you borrow their personal diary. You immediately have two strict ethical responsibilities, right?
Okay, I'm with you.
First, you keep it locked up. You don't just leave it open on a coffee table at a cafe where anyone walking by can read it.
Yeah.
That represents the core of privacy.
Right, and the second responsibility.
Well, if for some legitimate reason you need to quote something from that diary, you have a massive ethical duty never to take a single sentence out of context to make that person look bad or to twist their words to mean something they totally didn't intend.
Yeah, you have to be fair to the author.
Exactly. Like if the diary says, I hate my job today because I spilled coffee on my laptop, you don't run around telling people she says she hates her job and is going to quit.
It would be totally deceptive.
Right. That represents ethics and accuracy. You have to honor the context.
That is a brilliant analogy. Taking a data point out of context to artificially prove a theory is just as unethical as misquoting a diary to start a rumor.
It's the exact same mechanism.
It is. When you handle personal data, whether it's tracking user behavior on a website, compiling survey responses, or, you know, analyzing purchasing habits, you are essentially holding a digitized, aggregated version of human behavior.
It's basically a bunch of tiny diaries.
Exactly. You have to honor the context of how and why that information was given to you.
Okay, so understanding this ethical framework is essential, but, you know, it remains purely theoretical until you actually put it into practice.
Right, theory isn't enough.
How do we take these high-level concepts of intellectual honesty and privacy and turn them into concrete digital habits?
It requires building active muscle memory. You have to practice it. So here's a specific actionable habit you can start today.
Awesome. What is it?
Take just one chart, one statistic, or one data visualization that you encounter today. It could be in a news article, crossing your social media feed, or even in a textbook. Stop and critically audit it. Yes. Ask yourself a series of mechanical questions. What is the true source of this number? Can I identify any possible limitations or missing variables that the creator conveniently left out?
Like the rain in the bike lane example.
Exactly. Then ask, are there any ethical risks in how this data was likely collected?
Yeah.
And finally, if I were handed this raw data, how would I interpret it responsibly?
So you stop being a passive consumer, mindlessly scrolling through feeds, and you become an active, critical auditor.
That's the shift.
But, you know, you don't have to do all of this heavy lifting purely in your head, right? There are practical digital tools designed specifically to help you maintain this integrity and build a professional architecture around your data.
Oh, completely. The tools you select and how you deploy them matter just as much as your mindset.
Right. We often treat tools like Google Forms or Microsoft Forms as just digital clipboards.
Yeah, just a quick way to grab info.
You throw a few questions together, send out a link, and watch a spreadsheet fill up. But if you are using them professionally, they are so much more than that. They are your first line of defense for data integrity.
How so?
Well, when used correctly, they help you establish secure, responsible data collection pipelines. You can use data validation to ensure responses are standardized, preventing the kind of messy, subjective data that leads to inaccurate conclusions later on.
That's a great point.
And you can control exactly who has access to the back end, ensuring privacy right at the point of collection.
So you are essentially building guardrails before the data even arrives.
Exactly.
And when it comes to managing the information and the sources you've collected, utilizing a tool like Zotero is fantastic. But we need to elevate how we think about a tool like that.
It's not just for making bibliographies.
No, it isn't just a citation generator to help you avoid a plagiarism penalty from a strict professor. It is a tool for creating a fully transparent, auditable paper trail.
An auditable paper trail. I like that. Meaning anyone looking at your work can retrace your exact steps.
Precisely. It allows a future employer, a peer reviewer, or a collaborator to verify your foundation. You are showing your work.
You're saying, here's the proof.
Right. You are saying, here is the data, here is exactly where it came from, and here is how I arrived at my conclusion. It is about building a defensible architecture of trust around your work.
Which brings us right back to your internal mindset, because as you prepare for a future-ready career, all the software and tools in the world won't save you if your fundamental approach to information is flawed.
That's why I want to leave you with this ultimate reflection prompt. How can I use data in a way that is accurate, fair, and responsible?
Accurate, fair, and responsible.
It is a question you should be asking yourself every single time you open a spreadsheet, design a feedback survey, or paste a chart into a presentation deck.
Because responsible data use isn't just about avoiding a privacy lawsuit or a reprimand from your boss. It's not just some compliance checklist.
No, not at all.
It is the very thing that builds foundational trust. It ensures transparency in your workflow, and it actively safeguards privacy in an increasingly complex and interconnected digital world.
And by mastering this, you prove that you have the digital confidence and the adaptability required for lifelong learning and continuous professional growth.
It shows you're ready.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You establish yourself as a professional who truly respects the immense power of the tools they wield.
Well said. As we wrap up this deep dive, we want to encourage you to stay curious, stay responsible, and stay future ready.
Absolutely.
Make sure you review the end of module study guide and take the time to complete the workbook activities. The theory is really important, but the practical application is where this really becomes second nature.
And if you want to explore the deeper mechanics of these concepts, we highly recommend investigating the foundational texts that inform this lesson.
Oh, definitely. What should they read?
Well, specifically, Weapons of Math Destruction by Kathy O'Neill, published in 2016. It brilliantly details how algorithms can automate inequality.
That's a great one.
Then there's Data Feminism by Catherine D'Ignazio and Lauren F. Klein, published in 2020, which explores the power dynamics behind who collects data and why. And finally, The Art of Statistics by David Spiegelhalter, published in 2019, which is just a masterclass in interrogating numbers rather than taking them at face value.
Those are incredible resources to keep building your expertise and challenging your assumptions.
They really are.
But before we go, we want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over. We've talked a lot today about the data we do use, how to verify it, how to handle it safely, and how to interpret it ethically.
Right.
But consider this. What if the data we choose not to collect says just as much about our values and biases as the data we do?
Wow. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive.
Keep asking the hard questions, and we'll catch you next time.